Welcome back, everybody. Today we're going on another deep dive, and this time we're looking at some excerpts from Dr. Marv Wilson's lectures on the biblical prophets,
Okay.
focusing specifically on Amos, and we're going to be looking at his final three messages to the northern kingdom of Israel.
Sounds good.
Now, what's really fascinating about Amos is that he kind of steps into this kingdom that is seemingly overflowing with religious activity, you know, feasts and offerings and all that.
Oh yeah, they were very outwardly religious.
But he condemns them.
Interesting.
So why is that?
Yeah, that's a great question.
That's the puzzle we're going to unpack today.
Well, what's so fascinating is this irony. You know, on the surface, you see this picture of, you know, piety and devotion, but then just below the surface, there's this really deep social injustice.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
And that tension is really at the heart of what Amos is trying to get across.
Okay, so let's talk about one of the most vivid images he uses, and that is the cows of Bashan that Dr. Wilson mentions.
Oh, yeah.
Not exactly a flattering comparison, is it?
Right.
What do you think Amos was getting at by invoking this image?
I think it's brilliant,
Yeah.
honestly. You have to remember that Bashan was known for its lush pastures and really well-fed cattle.
Right?
And so by comparing the wealthy women of Israel to these like pampered cows, he's highlighting their complacency and their indifference to the suffering that's all around them. It's a pretty scathing critique of their priorities.
So he's essentially saying you're feasting while others starve. And
Exactly.
it's highlighting that chasm between their outward displays of religion and then their inward state.
Yeah, their heart. And it gets even more interesting when you consider his sarcastic role to come to Bethel and transgress.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Bethel, as you know, was a major religious center.
Right.
So it's like he's saying, go ahead, continue with your empty rituals while you ignore justice and righteousness.
So the location itself adds another layer of irony. He's
Yeah.
highlighting the absurdity of their actions.
Exactly.
Now, Dr. Wilson talks about this tension between priests and prophets.
Right.
Could you unpack that a bit more for us?
Sure, yeah. So what Dr. Wilson's suggesting is that while the priests were very focused on maintaining the external rituals, you know, the doing of religion,
Okay.
the prophets were more concerned with the internal state of the heart. It wasn't enough to just go through the motions.
Right.
True religion demands a genuine transformation of the heart, a turning away from sin, and a commitment to actually living justly.
So it's not about checking all the boxes. It's about genuine repentance and a changed heart.
That's right.
Like Dr. Wilson's example of, you know, wearing a wedding ring but being unfaithful.
Oh, yeah, right.
The outward symbol is meaningless without the inward reality.
Yeah, and speaking of reality,
Yeah.
God tries to get their attention in a very real way by sending all these calamities their way, famine, drought, blight, plagues, even an earthquake.
Yeah, it's quite the list.
But it doesn't seem to have really changed their behavior much.
No, it doesn't.
And throughout these messages, we hear that refrain, "Yet you did not return to me." And it really highlights that persistent refusal of the Israelites to turn back to God despite these warnings.
Now, what about that powerful image of the brand snatched from the burning?
Oh, yeah.
That one really stuck with me.
Well, this is where Dr. Wilson shares that story about Abraham Joshua Heschel.
Okay.
And he was a Jewish theologian
Okay.
who barely escaped Nazi-occupied Poland.
Wow.
And he described himself as a brand snatched from the burning.
Wow.
It's this powerful image of being rescued, being pulled back from destruction.
Right.
But it also kind of highlights this idea that even after experiencing such calamity, people don't always turn back to God.
So what is it that God really wants from them?
Right, what's the solution?
Yeah.
Well, Amos states it pretty clearly in chapter 5, verse 4. He says, "Seek me and live."
Okay.
And this is what Dr. Wilson was emphasizing is the foundation of true religion. It's a personal relationship with God.
Right.
You can't just go through the motions doing empty rituals. You need to have that
It
foundation.
needs to start there.
Yeah, but did anyone actually listen to Amos?
Well, he certainly wasn't holding back.
He was not.
He went so far as to directly challenge the leaders who, ironically, were sitting at the gate,
Oh,
the
wow.
very place where justice was meant to be administered.
Yeah.
These leaders were outwardly religious, but inwardly corrupt, engaging in bribery and perverting justice.
The hypocrisy is just striking, isn't it?
It really is.
And Amos doesn't let them off the hook. He reminds them of the importance of mishpat and tzedakah,
And those are the Hebrew words for.
justice and righteousness.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Dr. Wilson pointed out that Heschel had a really interesting take on righteousness.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Can you elaborate on that for us?
Yes, so Heschel believed that righteousness encompasses not just fairness, but also compassion. It's a genuine concern for the well-being of others.
So it's not just about following the letter of the law, but having a heart that is moved by the needs of others.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, now this is where I get a bit confused because Dr. Wilson describes this passage where God seems to just reject all their religious practices.
Yeah.
their feasts, their assemblies, their offerings, even their music.
Wow, yeah.
Is he saying that all ritual is bad?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Well, it's important to remember that the Bible often uses powerful imagery and hyperbole to make a point.
Okay.
So what God is rejecting here are these empty rituals that are devoid of true devotion and genuine care for others.
So it's like saying, I don't want your fancy gifts if your heart's not in it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's about aligning your actions with your beliefs.
That's right.
Which what thinks the wealthy and complacent were particularly bad at.
And so Amos pronounces woe upon them.
Right.
Which highlights their isolation and their detachment from the struggles of everyday people.
Dr. Wilson calls it a fortress mentality.
Yes.
They've built walls around themselves, both literally and figuratively.
Yes.
Blinding themselves to the suffering outside.
That's right.
So we have these scathing rebukes, these pronouncements of woes.
Right.
Where do we go from here?
Well, next, Amos receives five powerful visions.
Okay.
And each one offers a glimpse into Israel's condition and this impending judgment.
Mm.
It's like watching a disaster movie unfold. We see locusts devouring the crops, fire consuming the land, a plumb line revealing the crookedness of the nation, a basket of overripe fruit signifying decay.
Oh, wow.
And finally, this chilling image of the Lord standing by the altar, ready to bring judgment.
That's quite the wake-up call.
It is.
Though a terrifying one.
And Dr. Wilson reminds us that visions were a legitimate form of revelation in the Bible.
Yeah.
Just like Isaiah's vision of the Lord in the temple, or Ezekiel's vision of the Valley of Dry Bones.
Right.
So while these visions may seem strange and symbolic,
yeah,
they're meant to be taken seriously.
Yeah, but it wasn't all doom and gloom, was it?
Right.
Dr. Wilson mentioned something about Amos acting as an intercessor?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
In one of the visions, we see Amos pleading with God to spare Israel from the fire.
Okay.
And this echoes Moses' intercession for the Israelites after that whole golden calf incident.
It's such a powerful image, the prophet standing in the gap, pleading for mercy.
And Dr. Wilson suggests that this act of intercession foreshadows the role of Jesus as our intercessor.
Wow.
The one who stands between us and God's wrath.
That's incredible.
Pleading for forgiveness.
It makes me want to explore those connections further, but it seems we've come to the end of part one of our deep dive.
Okay.
But don't go anywhere. We'll be back with more insights from Amos in just a moment. Welcome back to our deep dive into the prophet Amos. We left off with some pretty harsh warnings and pronouncements of woes upon the northern kingdom of Israel.
It was pretty intense.
It really was. And, you know, even in the face of all those calamities, it seems like they just wouldn't turn back to God.
Yeah, it's really hard to fire them.
It is. It makes you wonder, what would it actually take for them to wake up?
Right.
And realize the gravity of the situation they're in.
Well, I think that question really gets to the heart of human nature. We see this tendency throughout history, you know, people getting comfortable with the way things are,
right?
Even when those ways are leading them away from what's right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because this brings us to this powerful image of the plumb line in Amos chapter 7, verse 7.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Wilson talked about how in ancient times they would use a plumb line to make sure the walls were straight and structurally sound.
Hey, exactly.
So what's the significance of this image here in relation to Israel?
Well, it's acting as a symbol of God's standards of righteousness and justice.
Okay.
So when God holds this plumb line up against Israel, it reveals just how far they've deviated.
I see.
You know, their moral foundation is all out of whack, and just like a crooked wall, they're in danger of collapsing.
Wow, that's a powerful image.
Yeah, and it's not just about personal piety here.
Right.
It's about the very fabric of their society being out of sync with God's will.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the fact that, you know, Israel saw themselves as God's chosen people.
Right.
It's like God saying, listen, your special status doesn't exempt you from the consequences.
Exactly. Privilege doesn't equal immunity.
Right.
And we see that message echoed again in the vision of the basket of summer fruit.
Okay.
Dr. Wilson talked about this symbolism of ripe fruit,
mm-hmm.
how it quickly reaches its peak, but then just as quickly begins to rot.
Right.
What do you think Amos is trying to convey with this image?
It seems like it's a metaphor for Israel itself. You know,
yeah.
They've reached this point of prosperity, but they're on the verge of decay.
Right. The good times are about to come to an end.
They're ripe for judgment.
Exactly. The image suggests that their time is running out.
Yeah.
And the consequences are about to catch up with them.
It's a warning.
And not a very popular one.
I can imagine it didn't make Amos a lot of friends.
No. Speaking truth to power rarely does.
Right.
But that boldness is really on full display in this final vision.
Okay.
Where Amos sees the Lord standing by the altar,
mm-hmm.
not to receive sacrifices, but to pronounce judgment.
It's a chilling scene.
It is, and I imagine quite a shocking one for those who were used to associating the altar with atonement and forgiveness.
Right. It's like a complete reversal.
Yeah, it's as if God is saying, your sacrifices mean nothing to me.
Right.
I desire justice and righteousness.
It all circles back to that central irony.
Yes.
All this religious activity, but their hearts were far from God.
It's a cautionary tale.
It is, and it makes you wonder, how do we ensure that our own religious practices are genuine?
Right. How do we avoid falling into the same trap?
Yeah, how do we strike that balance between outward observance and inward transformation?
It's a lifelong challenge, I think.
Yeah.
But Dr. Wilson offers some really helpful insights. He talks about, you know, regularly examining our own hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Are we truly seeking God?
Right.
Or are we just going through the motions?
Are our actions matching our beliefs?
Exactly. It's about being honest with ourselves.
Right.
And recognizing where we might be falling short.
Where we can grow.
Yeah. And it's also about being aware of the dangers of complacency.
Mm.
You know, just because things are going well for us doesn't mean we're in the right standing with God.
Yeah, it's easy to get complacent when things are going well.
Comfort can be the enemy of spiritual growth.
It really can.
Yeah.
And lastly, Dr. Wilson stresses the importance of living out our faith in practical ways.
Absolutely. Faith without agonin is meaningless.
Right.
It's about pursuing justice,
mm-hmm.
righteousness in our communities, just like Amos called the Israelites to do.
It's about making a real difference in the world.
Yes, exactly.
Now, I know that Amos was primarily addressing the northern kingdom of Israel.
Right.
But do you think there are any implications for the southern kingdom, Judah?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
And while Amos doesn't explicitly address Judah in these messages,
yeah.
Dr. Wilson suggests that there's a broader warning here for all who claim to follow God.
So it's not just a historical account.
No, it's a timeless message that transcends time and culture.
And I think this is where understanding the historical context is really crucial. Dr. Wilson reminds us that just a few decades after Amos delivers these warnings, the northern kingdom falls to the Assyrians.
Yeah, 721 BC.
Their complacency and their refusal to repent had real consequences.
It did, and while the southern kingdom of Judah survived a bit longer,
right,
they too would eventually face judgment for their own sin.
It really underscores the point that God takes sin seriously.
Yeah.
No matter who you are.
No matter your position.
And it highlights the importance of humility and repentance.
Yes, we are all accountable.
Now, I'm curious about Amos's encounter with Amaziah, the priest of Bethel.
Oh, yes.
Dr. Wilson mentioned that Amos had the courage to confront even the most powerful people of his day.
He did.
What happened there?
Well, Amaziah felt very threatened by Amos's message.
Okay.
And so he accused him of treason and tried to silence him.
Wow.
He even told Amos to go back to Judah and prophesy there.
Really?
Implying that he was just a troublemaker, you know, looking for an audience.
But Amos didn't back down, did he?
No, he didn't. He boldly stated that he wasn't a professional prophet, but a shepherd.
Okay.
And a dresser of sycamore trees called by God to deliver this message.
It's like he's saying, I'm not doing this for my own gain or recognition.
Right.
I'm doing this because God told me to.
Exactly. And then Amos delivers this really sobering prophecy against Amaziah and his family.
Okay.
Foretelling their exile and destruction.
It's a stark reminder that you can't silence God's truth.
And what's remarkable is that despite these confrontations and the bleakness of his pronouncements,
right.
Amos's message ultimately offers hope.
That's right. Throughout his message, we see this recurring theme of God's persistent love.
Yes.
Even in the midst of their rebellion.
It's like he's saying, I'm not giving up on you, even when you give up on me.
Exactly. He continues to send prophets and warnings and judgments.
Yeah.
All to try to draw them back to himself.
It's a powerful reminder that his love is unconditional.
Yeah.
Unwavering. It's not based on our performance or our ability to earn it.
It's just there.
A constant.
Yeah,
in a world of change.
It's a beautiful thought, and it's a message that carries through the entire Bible.
It does.
From Genesis to Revelation.
God's love is the bedrock of our faith.
It's the anchor.
That holds us steady.
It's been a fascinating exploration of Amos so far.
It really has.
But I know there's more to uncover, so.
There is.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll come back for the final part of our deep dive.
Okay.
Where we'll explore the concluding chapter of Amos and see what glimpses of hope it offers.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the book of Amos. We've gone through these messages of warning and judgment and even glimpsed God's love for his people. And now we're turning to the final chapter.
Okay.
I'm really curious to see where Amos leaves us. Is it all doom and gloom?
Right.
Or is there some hope?
Well, chapter 9 definitely starts out with a pretty dramatic vision.
Okay.
Amos sees God striking the temple at Bethel.
Hmm.
You know, the very heart of Israel's false worship. It's a pretty powerful image of judgment and destruction.
Wow. But then in the midst of all this, a really remarkable shift happens.
Okay. I'm intrigued what happens.
God makes this incredible declaration. He says, I will restore the fallen booth of David. Now, Dr. Wilson explains that this phrase refers to the Davidic dynasty, you know, the line of kings that started with King David.
Right.
So it's a promise of restoration, not just of a physical structure, but of a lineage, a heritage.
So see, even though the northern kingdom is facing this destruction, God's promising to preserve the line of David.
Right. And it's really significant because it points forward to the coming Messiah, who, according to prophecy, would be a descendant of David.
Oh, so we're starting to see those connections between the Old Testament prophecies and the New Testament fulfillment.
Exactly.
It's like watching a tapestry unfold with each thread kind of weaving a bigger story.
That's a great way to put it. And Dr. Wilson points out that this specific passage is actually quoted in the book of Acts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the Apostle James uses it to explain the inclusion of Gentiles in God's plan of salvation.
So it's not just about restoring a nation or a dynasty.
No.
It's about restoring humanity.
It's this universal restoration, a plan that encompasses everyone.
Wow. And what about the rest of chapter 9?
Yeah.
Are there more glimpses of this restoration?
Yeah, God goes on to describe this time of incredible blessing and prosperity. You know, rebuilding cities, planting vineyards, enjoying the fruits of their labor.
Wow, it sounds idyllic.
It's a beautiful image of renewal and abundance.
So amidst the judgment and the warnings.
Right.
There's this message of hope, a promise for a brighter future.
Absolutely. And Dr. Wilson emphasized that this future isn't just for Israel either.
Oh, really?
He points to the very last verse of Amos.
Okay.
Where God says, I will plant them on their land and they shall never again be uprooted from the land that I have given them.
Wow.
It's this powerful affirmation of God's faithfulness and his commitment to his people.
It's a reminder that even when things seem really bleak, God is always at work.
Yeah, always orchestrating his plan.
This deep dive into Amos has been quite the journey.
It really has.
God's righteous anger, his persistent love, and his plan for restoration.
It's a lot to process.
And I think it's okay to just sit with these emotions.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And grapple with the truth of it all.
Yeah, the Bible's not just a quick read.
Right.
Or a simple answer book.
It's so much more than that.
It's an invitation to a lifelong journey.
Yeah, it's about wrestling with these questions, you know, engaging with the text.
Right.
Allowing it to change us.
And that's what makes it so fascinating and rewarding.
It really does. There's always something new to discover.
Always a deeper layer to uncover.
A fresh perspective.
Yeah.
You know, as we wrap up this deep dive, I'm left with this sense of both the seriousness of God's call to justice and righteousness.
Yeah.
And just this vastness of his love and mercy.
Well, I think that's the most important takeaway from Amos.
Yeah.
It's not an either or thing.
Right.
It's both God is both just and merciful. And he wants us to reflect those same qualities.
That's a good word. Well, time for us to surface from our deep dive into Amos.
Okay.
Big thank you to Dr. Marv Wilson for his lectures and to you, our listeners, for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
We hope you'll keep exploring and questioning and seeking a deeper understanding. Until next time, keep diving.